Freedom!
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvasuto.
Good evening, Drew.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day out there.
You should have like an Irish name or two in there, because you're not 100% Italian.
No, I'm quarter Irish, quarter German, and half Sicilian.
And that's not even any Italian. You're half Sicilian, you know? You know, anyway, but, you know, you should be like Tommaso, what would be a good Irish name, you know, Sean Giuseppe, what's another good Irish name?
McDonough
Bonvasuto.
There you go.
There you go. So we'll think about that. And tonight, we have with us a guest.
Yes, we do.
Why don't you introduce our guest to us, to our audience?
Yeah, well Raj Gul is an estate attorney, and we're really excited that he's here today. He is an expert in estate planning and is an attorney. So,
and you were telling me earlier that he's not the Raj Gul from Batman.
Batman, yeah. My son was getting a little confused about that.
That I am not. Yeah. I'll stay with what I seem to know. Not fighting criminals, but trying to help help families with their estate planning needs.
Yeah, well, either way, you're trying to help people. You're a superhero.
I like how you put that. I'm going to utilize that. That's going to be part of my new mantra, I think. So
we're going to talk estate planning and elder care, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And so elder care planning is for people who may need assistance with long-term care and are afraid that their assets will be completely eaten up in that, and they want to know, is government assistance possible, and how can they go about securing some government assistance without using up every single dollar they have before they have to apply.
Yep.
And you know, especially with a husband and wife, you know, and the laws are very clear that there are lots of assets they get to keep. So we're taking calls tonight.
Yes, we are.
So if somebody wants to call in and ask an estate planning question about wills, powers of attorney, advance directives, trust planning, things of that sort, Raj can answer those kind of questions. But if you also want to call in because you have concerns about elder care planning and you're afraid that, you know, your spouse is, you know, is becoming incapacitated and there may be a need for long-term care and you don't have a lot of assets, but you want to secure what you can to be able to, the community spouses we call them, to be able to continue to live after that spouse might pass away, whether it's 6 months or 6 years later, you know, a lot of money can be used up if not wisely thought out.
Yeah.
And there are strategies that can be used. Or maybe your mother or father is are the sole surviving spouse, and their assets are deteriorating, and you're thinking they're going to need long-term care, and we don't want to see all those assets eaten up in a long-term care situation. Raj can answer those questions. So it's estate planning and elder care.
We have a lot to cover.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And if you want to call in and ask a question, it's 410-922-6680, and we'll go to our good friend Michael in Northwest Baltimore to ask the first question. Michael, you get the first question. Go ahead, buddy.
Thanks, Drew and Giuseppe. I'd like to ask you if you would discuss, even have your guest take a part in this. Somebody wants to leave an estate as a legacy, and he's told by the insurance agent, that if he takes a variable universal life policy, it doesn't have the kind of tax consequences that one would think because it is part insurance, part investment. Or if he takes a cash value policy, he'll have money built up in that over the course of time. So if the person passes, the family will get the cash value and the death benefit. Or a term policy where there's no cash value built up, no forced savings, but the person can invest the difference. Which would you say is the best way to go of those three scenarios?
All right, you hang up. We'll listen, okay? All right. All right, Michael, good question. So, you know, do you have an opinion on that? So it really depends is my question.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the lawyer-like answer is it depends on what the goals are going to be.
You know, younger couple, I would say, you know, go for the term
policy, absolutely,
and build your assets up for retirement and college planning and things like that. But if it was
exactly
an older
right.
couple where they want to leave a legacy, like he was saying, I probably would use cash value or variable
life insurance
is a great option. But I would be very cost sensitive. I would be very
right.
commission sensitive and so forth.
And when it comes to from a tax standpoint, that, you know, as we typically or generally speaking, that life insurance will go income tax free. The one thing that, you know, I think our listeners need to be mindful of is that, you know, depending on who the owner of that policy is, that policy will be includable in your potential taxable estate for the purposes of estate taxes.
And we in the People's Republic of Maryland still have to deal with that.
We still, although that's changing.
That's changing. 2 more years,
and,
right?
As we know, we have the exemption currently is the $3 million, and if we could just hang in there until 2019.
What do you think Maryland's going to do if the federal government goes to zero, because Maryland's law is written to couple with the Fed?
That's right. But the interesting part, and I've been following quite a bit with the new administration and the potential tax law changes, the big change that may come forth is they may get rid of estate taxes, but the big challenge will be what happens upon time of death to the unrealized gain on capital assets.
Yeah,
the step
capital
up.
Appreciation,
and the step
up in basis. That's something we're going to have to talk about in more detail when we get a chance, because
right.
you and I all know what we just said.
Right.
Most
and
of
we
our listeners
that.
Are thinking, what is a step up in basis?
Yeah,
but we're going
right.
to go to Wayne first in Glen Burnie. We're going to answer his question. Wayne, how can we help you?
Well, I was just wondering, in reference to a lot of the questions, but with banks or other paid upon death or transferred upon death, paid upon death, do those that are on that, do they have to, if they're like siblings, do they have to pay taxes to the state of Maryland? I don't think they do to the federal government, but I've never been able to get a clear answer on that. Or if they've never contributed to the funds that you have in the account that has paid upon death to them.
This is a great misunderstanding. A lot of people think when you inherit assets, there's income taxes
That's exactly
and so
right.
forth. But you go ahead and answer that.
Well, yeah. So when it comes to the death taxes, as Drew just mentioned, that an inheritance is not income. So if you inherit, let's say, $100,000 as a beneficiary of a bank account, that's not $100,000 of income that you report on your personal income tax return. But having said that, Drew, as you know, there are different death taxes. The one we just alluded to, called the estate tax, and that's imposed on people who die with too much money. And we have certain exemptions. Currently for the federal government, it's $5,490,000. And the state of Maryland is currently at $3 million. And that will become the same as the federal government in 2 more years. But that's not to be confused with the inheritance tax. And the inheritance tax is a state-by-state tax imposed on the recipient of the inheritance. And in Maryland, as long as the recipient is immediate family, a spouse, parent, child, grandchild, and brother and sister, that individual will pay no inheritance tax whatsoever. But if it's a niece or nephew or a friend, then there's a 10% inheritance tax that's imposed on the value of that inheritance. And again, we look at the source, the person who just passed away, and what state did they live in? Where were they domiciled? And we're assuming in this case that the source is Maryland.
Yeah. So, Wayne, no problem for children in inheriting money, no matter who put the money in the account. All right, buddy?
Okay, well, that's, yeah, for you brothers and sisters, then they're clear that they could, if there's a passing of one, of the owner of that account, then they do not have to worry about any type of...
Correct. Brothers and sisters don't
That's
have
exactly
any
right,
any worries unless you're well over $3-5 million in assets in total. If not, don't worry about it, okay?
Thank you.
Okay,
so
buddy, take care. I got to go to traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283. Or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE. Or visit us online at drewtigg.com. That's drewtigg.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Raj Gul, and Raj is an estate attorney and elder care. So we're doing call-in. Anybody wants to call in, ask a question about estate planning, wills, powers of attorney, trust, advance directives, all those kind of good things. Or if you have questions about an elderly parent or a spouse who may need long-term care and you're worried about what kind of money drain this could be, and could the government, is there a possibility of getting government assistance? All these things. And we were talking earlier about step up in bases. And so why don't you give us a quick brief on what a step up in bases is?
Of course. So as you know, that when you sell a capital asset, real estate, stock, you typically pay capital gains on the difference between the sale price and what you paid for it. And what you paid for it is known as the cost basis. So, you know, for highly appreciated assets like stocks and real estate that have gone up significantly, we oftentimes counsel our clients, don't sell those assets while you're alive, because if you hang on to it till time of death, that we get a new cost basis that gets set. This is the step up, meaning that we no longer worry about what you paid for it. It will now jump up to the value of that asset on the date of your passing. So let's say you have $1 million of IBM stock and you paid $100,000 for it. If you were to sell it during your lifetime, you're going to pick up $900,000 of capital gains and pay your tax liability. And if you hang on to it until the day you pass away, the cost basis is no longer that $100,000 you paid for it. It's now going to be that $1 million. So you literally can sell it the day after you pass away, or your heirs will, and they'll be able to take that full $1 million and not have to pay any capital gains on it.
Now, a lot of people think that if you gave me that IBM stock during your lifetime, so I'm your child, and you give me that $100,000 cost basis IBM stock worth $1 million, that I get that same step up in basis.
Unfortunately, I hear that all the time, and people find out, unfortunately, sometimes the hard way, that's not the case. That, unfortunately, when you take and make a gift during lifetime, your cost basis will also transfer over to the recipient. So back to the example we've been utilizing, if I paid $100,000 and I give you that same $1 million of IBM stock, you'll take my cost basis of $100,000. If you go to sell it, then you're going to pick up that $900,000 of gain.
Right. So if you want to transfer it to your child without tax consequences, you have to
hang
pay
on
a big
till
price.
Yeah.
You have to pay a big price to do it.
That's right. Or hang on till time of death, and that is
same
a big,
big
and
price.
That is a big price. I would say it was, but some people are willing to do that.
Some people. That is true.
In that same vein, what about the issue of it being in a trust? What are the dynamics there?
Yeah, well, it depends. Now, again, using that magic word, it depends. Depends on what type of trust. Now, if we talk about a revocable living trust, which a lot of people utilize as part of, ways of avoiding probate, that there's no difference between the trust and you as an individual, and you'll still be entitled to that step up in cost basis at time of death. Unlike other trusts where, again, with certain provisions not included, if it's an irrevocable trust, then that same carryover basis, like we used Drew in that example that we utilize, if I give you $1 million of IBM stock, if the trust is not appropriately drafted and doesn't have certain provisions and it's an irrevocable trust, then that same carryover basis could carry over and you don't get the tax benefits that we've been speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when you get into the world of trust, you got to be very, I mean very careful about how it's structured.
So now one of the big mistakes I see often is, they're walking through the halls of the independent living community and Jane tells Joan, well, I just put my daughter's name on my house and you should put your daughter's name on your house,
yeah.
Or whatever, or your bank or your brokerage account, you know, and, there is Still, they may get a step up in basis.
That's right.
Correct?
That's right. But
they may, if they sell it while they're still alive, that could really cause some negative consequences.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the big misnomers that people have. I've got to add my child on to
I think it's
my
the
house.
Biggest mistake people make.
Biggest mistake.
Is they just put their children's names on everything because they think that that's important to do.
And never mind the tax consequences. I counsel clients all the time that want to do this. Do you understand that if you have a falling out, that could be problematic? And what happens if your child gets into a car accident or some type of professional liability?
Or more typically, get divorced.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, now all of a sudden, your house that you know you put
or your
on,
brokerage account that you're living on
now becomes at risk.
And now the spouse that you know your son-in-law is asking for you know a quarter of your money because
That's
your
right.
wife's name's on that account.
And I can assure you, as we all can imagine, that the creditor and that divorcing spouse can care less what the intentions were.
That's
they want
right.
their money, mm-hmm. and they want it now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a big mistake. So we're here with Raj Gul. We're doing estate planning and elder care planning. You want to call and ask a question, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. You're available to call in for the rest of the show. When people call in early, get the most attention to their questions, 410-922-6680. So, you know, in elder care planning, okay, you know, let's say you have a husband and wife. Excuse me, and you have $200,000-$300,000, and you got a little bit of Social Security and a little pension, and so the community spouse, the healthy spouse, is going to need this $300,000 plus whatever income they're going to get for the rest of their life for the remaining time they're going to be alive.
Absolutely,
but they're going to lose $100,000 or so a year in this long-term care predicament.
Right.
Without an attorney like you, and they go to Medicaid, Medicaid will let them spend every nickel they've got.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's not the law.
No.
It's not even close to the law.
And it's a shame. It's actually somewhat heartbreaking to find and meet clients that have not gotten that type of professional advice, seeing lose hundreds of thousands, if not their life savings, when that all could have been avoided. And the laws are actually designed to help. As you correctly noted, the one that's not in the nursing home, typically known as a community spouse, there's so much that can be done, and it's just a matter of getting the right information and the right advice. And, you know, and Drew, you know, I think, you know, we've seen situations where people have been able to utilize those strategies very effectively. And the laws, which are known as the spousal impoverishment laws, are really designed and provide lots of opportunity automatically to shelter the house, oftentimes shelter a certain amount of the assets, and the part that gets exposed potentially to the nursing home, that too can be protected all for the community spouse fairly seamlessly. But obviously, again, it comes down to the right advice and guidance that people should always seek and speak with their team of advisors, their attorney, to find out what can be done and to do it early enough in the process so they understand what's permissible and what's not. And it really can avoid tremendous amount of heartache and loss of financial security that's so important and can truly be protected for the benefit of the community spouse.
Well, we're here with Raj Gul. We're talking estate planning and elder care planning. I got to take my next pause with traffic, but Mark and any other caller wants to get on, if you'll hold for us through this pause, and we'll be up and answer your questions, 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask your question right now, I got to go to traffic. Be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
75% of adults agree they could benefit from advice and answers to everyday financial questions from a professional. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications and learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com, drewtig.com, and follow us on Twitter at the FinCon for educational updates.
I guess that's the best we can get. That's okay.
It's a good karaoke song, or you know.
Yeah, I guess. Not country rock or anything else that I've told him about in the past. But that's okay. I don't mind. We're here with Raj Gul tonight, and
yes,
he's
sir.
An estate attorney. And tell everybody what firm you're with.
I'm with Offit Kervin.
And how do they get in touch with you?
Your phone number is 443-738-1516, or you can go to the firm's website, which is www.offitkerman.com, and you can send an email that way, and always happy to answer questions and give direction to people at any time.
All right, well, we're going to get that number again, and remember in the future when I ask you that question, you always repeat your number twice.
Ah.
Never just say it once, because...
Clearly I'm a newbie.
You're a newbie.
Clearly I'm a newbie, so...
It's okay.
I'm learning.
It's okay.
I'm
Mark
learning.
In Cadenceville, how are you? Mark, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, there you go. There go you ahead go. And ask your question, buddy.
Okay, so there's that 5-year space between by the time you pass and you've set up your trust that there's not a tax consequence to your heirs. You know what I'm talking about?
I think you're talking about the transfer of a life insurance policy to an irrevocable trust. Is that what you're referring to?
No, isn't there like... you have you passed away, but 6 years prior, you put your estate into, I guess, a trust, so the creditors or your heirs would not be taxed on your assets.
I think what you're referring to, Mark, is if somebody was going into a Medicaid situation. You know, in other words, if you're trying to protect your assets from a long-term nursing care facility. But there is no trust that you're talking about that does just that and reduces taxes.
Okay, so if you do set up this estate, and you're saying to maintain the cost basis?
No.
Well, no. It's more, when we hear about the 5-year period, that's really in the context of people that are interested in protecting their assets from potential nursing home care costs. And qualifying for Medicaid. And, of course, when you apply for any kind of state benefits or these type of state benefits, they want to know what you've done with your assets. And they don't want people just coming to a nursing home, giving their assets away, saying, I'm broke, take care of me. Everybody would do it. So they've implemented this rule called the 5-year look-back period, wherein they can look in what have you been doing with your assets, and if you've been giving assets away, which could have otherwise been used for the nursing home, that there'll be certain penalties associated with that as a way of protecting the taxpayers. So I think that's the context that your question is related. But as Drew said, there's nothing that is familiar with, you know, in terms of tax savings or asset protection.
All right, Mark?
Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where he was, where he get that from, but I think it's the long-term
care
plan.
I think so,
planning.
Too. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Mike in Parkville, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Go ahead and ask your question, buddy.
It's probably along the same lines as far as a vacation home that they like to give to us.
Okay.
And I guess protect that and tax consequences. I mean, it probably should have been done a while ago.
Who owns the vacation home, Mike?
My father-in-law.
Your father-in-law. Okay, so your father-in-law owns a vacation home. And how many siblings does your wife have?
One.
Okay, and the father wants to give it to the wife, to his children?
Yes.
And he doesn't want them to pay taxes on it, and he wants them to keep it in the family?
Correct.
Okay. All right, Rog, that's a complicated one.
That's got lots of tentacles.
That's got lots of
yes,
tentacles on it.
Yes, it does. So, you know, so one starting point is, you know, is what we just talked about just a few minutes ago about the 5-year look-back period and the question that Mark asked.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is, if it gives that asset away, you know, what implication will this have on his ability to qualify for state benefits if he goes to a nursing home?
Correct.
And my hope is that, you know, he's healthy enough that 5 years can come and go without any problems.
But
right.
If he does that, now they lose the step-up in basis if
that's
that
right.
House is highly appreciated.
And that's strictly, we just talked about strictly just sort of an elder law. Now if we get into the tax planning aspect of it.
There's a push and a shove.
There's a push and a shove. And oftentimes good estate planning and good elder law planning oftentimes are at odds. And there's a tug of war. And so that's where, you know, when you sit down with the client, you're going to be asking these very questions. What is the cost basis? What are your goals? What are the other assets and income?
Yeah, they may have enough for long-term care. You don't have to worry about that. So you're going to go with the tax planning, not worry about the long-term care.
And if we can take it one step further, there's a way of oftentimes utilizing trusts. If appropriately drafted with right provisions, I can have my cake and eat it too. I can protect it from the nursing home.
Right.
And also get the step-up in cost basis using
certain
provisions.
That's true too. But you also have another issue. You have all these nieces and nephews that could come into the when the children start dying, and now you got a real hornet's nest.
That, absolutely, and you have to worry about the issues we talked about in an earlier question about.
Have we answered your question or confused you more yet, Mike?
Yeah, she did. I mean, there's one part that sounded good where I could have my cake and eat it too.
Yeah, well, but even then, it comes with a cost.
You got lots of issues. You got to think. You got to sit down with somebody who's going to really help you think this one out, Mike, or your in-laws have to, because if they're not familiar with the tax planning and the elder care planning and the estate planning, you could really end up with a hornet's
nest,
a big mess. So
it's a comprehensive
plan. It is a comprehensive plan, right. But I wish there was an easy answer for you on this, Mike. But there's lots of revolving issues that have to be addressed, or you're going to end up with a mess in the future.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's like he wants to give it to us. You know,
that's great.
Us being you two, or to the you and the your wife and
their
sister,
right?
Family.
Yeah. How highly appreciated is the place? Is it really valuable?
No, I mean, you know, everybody's it would fall under, you know, heaven forbid they pass away tomorrow. It falls way underneath the estate tax for his properties, his house and that house.
I got to run, but I'm sorry that we couldn't really give you your cake and eat it too easily on
this
radio show.
We tried, Mike.
But there are lots of things you can do, my friend, all right?
Need to do some research. Thank you very much.
Now's the time to plan.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to Jerry in West Virginia. Jerry, how can we help you?
My mother passed away, and so my father was not capable of taking care of himself. So we got him in assisted living. So now the house was sitting there, and we wanted to sell it. We had our name put on the deed.
Now,
when we sell it, what's that going to affect his assisted living?
Well, first off, I would take your names off that deed before you sell that house. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, from a tax planning standpoint, absolutely. But, you know, I guess the other aspect of this planning is, you know, are we going to be able to shelter assets from the nursing home? It sounds like we've got some potential Medicaid, long-term care issues that are floating underneath this as well.
Now, is he in assisted living or in long-term care, Jerry?
No, he's in assisted living. He's able to take care of himself. He's, you know, somewhat, but he wasn't able to be home by himself.
Do you have enough assets to keep him in the assisted living for a fair time?
He's got Social Security, of course, and then a small veterans pension.
So it sounds like
is he getting aid in attendance? VA aid in attendance? Have you talked to them?
No, it's not. He was a government employee. He just got
Okay. So he was not a vet himself?
No, he was not a vet.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it sounds like he's going to need every bit of that money, I think, to defray his assisted living care costs. So I agree with you, Drew. It may be advisable so we don't get the tax hit for you, because you're not it's not an owner-occupied principal residence for you. So you're going to be paying more capital gains than necessary, wherein the whole intention is to utilize those funds for him and to pay for his care expenses. So I would look carefully before you pull the trigger on that sale and make sure you understand the consequences before you have an oops moment.
Yeah, so you want to get your names off more than likely, Jerry, and you want to make sure you get competent elder care law advice and competent tax advice before you do much more at this point in time.
And I don't know if he's in West Virginia or Maryland, but obviously just keep in mind this is all state-specific, and you want to make sure you have competent counsel in that specific place where your father's residing.
All right, Jerry, good question.
All right, thank you very much.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
I'm not sure we're answering questions as opposed to causing more questions.
I didn't realize how difficult these questions were going to be, but these are very good questions. It's just trying to encapsulate quick answers.
Mm-hmm. It's
not very easy.
Yeah,
but they're great questions.
When we ask the questions we get, we can answer them quickly. But
yeah,
what you're dealing with in estate planning and elder care, it can really get a hornet's nest. I'm working on it, Chris. I'm working on it, man. I'm going to take a pause right now with traffic, and I'll be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Is this a piano recital you're doing? Eagles, Desperado.
Great song.
Mm-hmm. It is a good song. There you go, Chris. Well, how'd it go? I mean, you know, it only took you 2-3 songs to get to it, you know, but that's okay. All right, you know, well, we'll work on you, you know. Don't worry.
Drew and I are going to start singing.
Well, have you, anyway, we're going to Bob in Annapolis. Bob, how can we help you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Had a question because I was listening to you prior to the 6:30 break that you said that it wasn't good to put children's names on assets. And that's basically what the attorney did with my mom years ago. Put my brothers and I on the house when my mom was sick. She was terminal at that time, died a number of months later. That was back in 2000. And we just sold the house last year. We were all on the house on the deed. And, you know, we got the 1099 S's. And my two brothers, they think because, you know, they lived in the house for the 15 years, it's their personal residence. They don't have to pay any taxes. I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't think you owe any taxes on it at all, because I think he's going to get the step up in basis as long as they can prove it was mom's home, basically.
I absolutely agree with that, Drew.
But, you know, here's the risk, Bob, is that mom would have had to sell the house before she died. Then your brothers would have been right. They would have gotten the house tax-free. You would have got the shaft.
And they would
have got the gold mine.
That's right. And that's really what we were concerned about is, under, you know, if you have a sale before death, the tax implications and all of the non-tax issues that we alluded to, like falling out, divorce, asset protection, those are the things that people need to be aware of and sometimes are not aware of when they engage in that type of planning. And that's what we just wanted to make sure people walked away from.
You're fortunate, though, Bob. I would say the basis in the home was your one-third value that you got, and say you didn't get any. And actually, he could even have a tax loss in his situation, and the brothers could have no tax loss because they're claiming it's their personal residence.
That's right.
But Bob could claim it's an investment property and have a tax loss if it was administered at a higher price than they sold it
for. That's right, because it sounds like there's some gap between the date that mom passed away and when the property was sold, so I don't know what happened in the intervening time period, but I think that there's some interesting planning options.
My mom died in 2000, and we sold the house last year. The value of the house did go up, but I wasn't living there. My two brothers were.
That's a correct issue also, Bob. The appreciation between 2000 and 2000 and whatever you sold it, it will be tax-free to them because they consider it their personal residence. But to you, any gain from the day, the value of the day of death to today will be taxed to you. But it's only from the value at the time of mom's death.
And then, of course, if you've done any capital improvements,
or
put a new roof on, or if they did, then that could help on your cost basis. So I think you really want to make sure you've got all your ducks in a row if you've not already reported this to the IRS, just to make sure that we minimize the amount of tax that would be ultimately owed.
Good point.
Yeah, I think what I did is I actually took what the house was worth, tried to get as good a number as we could in 2000 what the house was worth, and then divided that by 3, and then, you know, the cost for, you know, the closing costs and all that, I took all, you know, a third of all those things off on my taxes, so.
Okay, well, I think that did good, but again, what Rod was saying is, let's say your brothers did some capital improvements over that last 13 years, you would have gotten a third of all those, too, if you did the homework on it.
Yeah, I don't think I included that, so I'll look back into that. I'll have to talk to my brothers, because I know they did do some work on it.
Yeah, even though it was their money, you still
yeah,
get a
right.
third of
that's
it.
That's right.
All right,
so
buddy.
I could still actually take a third of that off then. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Good luck, Bob.
See ya. Jeff in Baltimore City, how can we help you?
How are you, Drew?
I'm doing great. And you?
I'm okay. So my dad died in 2011, leaving my stepmother, and she died in 2015. So there was a house. It was worth roughly, you know, $300,000, and then a 401k, which, you know, was worth, you know, $200,000. So I withheld on the house 30%. No, the house I got with no tax hit. That's right. I withheld 30% on the 401k, and they had forced me to roll it over into a decedent IRA.
Right. It's called you could call it a decedent IRA, a beneficiary IRA. Was your name as the... Was your name the beneficiary of that 401k?
I was actually one of three.
One of three.
Okay.
Okay. So it's called a beneficiary, an inherited IRA, any of those types of things.
Right. So So they rolled it over into that. It's like I was surprised that I couldn't roll it over into my own 401k.
No, you cannot roll it over to your own. You have to roll it over to an inherited or decedent account, and it must stay.
I have 5 years to get it out at that point.
Well, no, not 5 years.
It should be.
If was your name on the beneficiary designation form of the person that died, or was it through the will that you got the money?
The will.
Ah,
that's a little different. That's a little different.
That's why you got the 5-year rule.
And was how old was your stepmother when she passed away?
65, 67.
Ah, okay, that's why. That's exactly
they were
right.
Both already in. They were having the mandatory. They were having to take the money out at this point.
Well, Mom wasn't over 70, and stepmom wasn't over 70 and a half, was she?
No.
No, so.
Right. And that's why
that's
we have
the
5-year
rule.
5-year rule. If okay. she had, if she had passed away beyond, after the age of 71 half, then we would have been able to take over her life expectancy and get a little bit more favorable, distribution scheme. But as it turns out, it's a 5-year, so that seems to be about right, which just points out, the importance of having beneficiary designations and
on the 401k and not just like the will saying
yeah
that's
three ways among these siblings.
That's
yeah,
exactly
let's,
right.
Let's address this and I mm-hmm. want all of our listeners mm-hmm. to hear this.
Yep.
What Jeff is talking about, you do not want your children or stepchildren or whoever you want your beneficiaries to be to inherit these types of retirement assets through your will. You want to make sure that beneficiary designation is absolutely right online. And Jeff, how old are you?
I'm 49.
You would have had over 35 years you could have withdrawn that money on, but because there was no beneficiary designation and it went to the will, you're forced to withdraw it over 5 years, and the income taxes are going to be dramatically different than what it would have been if you could have held it for 35 years in that account.
Right, because right now my income's pretty good, and so you tack it on, I'm in like a pretty high tax bracket. But
that's
in 30
right.
years, I'm retired, I'm not making that much money, and I could have just...
Absolutely. So all of our listeners, beneficiary designations, we monitor. Jeff, I appreciate you calling, buddy.
And Drew, if I can add one more. Okay. Even if you think you have your beneficiary up to date, double check it and triple check it. Mm-hmm. You can never be too paranoid about that issue.
Do you realize, Raj, this is interesting. When any client comes into our office, we try to meet with our clients at least once a year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We check the beneficiary designations every single time.
That's great.
But... despite that, Raj, we change the beneficiaries. We find that the client wants to change the beneficiary at least 10 to 20% of all those visits.
Interesting. Interesting. Because they have a change in their estate plan.
Or the broker didn't record it right.
Yeah, right.
And I can't tell you how many times that's the issue. The broker didn't record it right.
And this is why when you do get that verification, I always insist to my folks I meet, get it in writing. I want to see it in writing and not take it at face value from a telephone or some operator, an agent at a 1-800 number, which may or may not be accurate. Mm-hmm. I want to see it in writing to make absolutely positively, because just like we saw with Jeff, it's a huge deal from a financial and legal standpoint, and you hate to see families suffer for that.
Raj Gul, great estate and elder mm-hmm. care attorney, one of our main go-to guys in this area. What is the number that our listeners can get in touch with you?
You can reach me at 443-738-1516. And Drew, to show you that I'm listening, I'm going to do it again. 443-738-1516.
Is there an easier way to look for you in a website or something?
You can always go to www.offitkerman.com or just put Raj Goyle. Not many Rajs out there.
How do you spell Goyle?
G-O-E-L, or just Raj, estate planning. And
Raj is R-A-J.
R-A-J, correct.
R-A-J, Gul, G-O-E-L, Raj Gul, my man. Not the guy from Batman.
Not from Batman.
But pretty superhero himself,
but
anyway.
We do some good stuff.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.